Gallery Podcast.
Hello, I'm Miranda Hinckley and this is the National Gallery Podcast. Coming up, a trip to the theatre with French painter Paul Delaroche. And how kids can help their grown-ups get the most out of art. But with spring in the offing, we start with a masterpiece of Dutch flower painting, Jan van Heysum's Flowers in a Terracotta Vase. The picture includes peonies, poppies, marigolds, tulips and roses, all painted to give the illusion of life. But a closer look reveals the work isn't as realistic as it seems. To find out more, I visited the new Covent Garden flower market with art historian Richard Stemp. We met Gail Smith there, who creates many of the gallery's flower displays. She cast a florist's eye over the picture and spotted the problem immediately.
Yeah, I can't think of any month where we could find all of those at the same time. I think it's predominantly May. When I first looked at it, I sort of instantly thought, oh, this is kind of May, I'm feeling, because I think the majority of them are from that kind of season. But certainly, no, I wouldn't see all of those flowers at the same time.
So that raises an interesting question about how he actually composed the painting. Richard, how do you think it was done?
Well, there are a couple of ways he might have gone about doing it. One is to wait until the flower's in bloom and then paint it as he saw it onto the painting. But that would presuppose that he knew where that flower was going to go in the painting. He must have done a sketch beforehand, really. And to leave a space for that flower to be slotted in, what seems more likely is that he gradually built up a library of different images by doing sketches when the flowers are out, and then sort of arranging his sketches in display in the same way that you might actually arrange a floral display anyway, by taking the individual flowers rather than the sketches.
What do we think about the lighting? I mean, it strikes me that the lighting's almost impossible as well. It's, you know, lots of the flowers are equally well lit all the way across, and this very kind of luminous section in the middle.
We quite often, when we do a big display like this, we would put some light coloured flowers in the middle, sort of recede them right into the middle, sort of whites and yellows, so that you get some light in there. But you'd never be able to achieve what this arrangement has achieved, of having that sort of almost like a light bulb inside the painting glowing out at you. It would normally be very dark in the centre of an arrangement there.
I mean, lots of the flowers look as though they're sort of at their very peak or just sort of past their peak. I mean, these tulips look really overblown, and just the way some of these peonies are kind of hanging down, they look as though they've just gone past the point at which they're kind of at their freshest. Richard, do you think that's part of the point of the painting?
I think it probably is, really, yes, because what we were saying earlier about the fact that you wouldn't get all of these flowers at one time implies that we have a process going on from the narcissi coming out in spring, the peonies in May, but of course we've also got fruit here, we've got grapes,
yes,
we've got peaches, and so it moves on to the autumn as well. And the fact is, there is this cycle of life, of things being born, moving on to things dying, and the fruits then have the seeds. We've got a walnut down the bottom there, which also imply this sense of life going on. And this is sort of picked up by the things which aren't part of the floral arrangement, really. There's a bird's nest at the bottom of the painting with some eggs in it. And also just above that, there's a fly sitting on the base. Now, there's a couple of things that could be there for. One is that it is a symbol of mortality. Flies are often associated with dying, death, being fly-blown. So that's one thing, the idea of death there, but also the sense that it's not entirely clear where the fly is standing. It could be standing on the base underneath the vase, but it could actually be standing on the painting itself and casting a shadow. And it's almost as if Van Heysum's playing a game. If he's painted it well enough, you might try and brush the fly off, because the fly thinks it's real and it's actually landed there. But then above that, and there are a few of them around, there are butterflies. Now, they are another symbol which actually goes beyond death, because they start their life as caterpillars, which aren't entirely attractive. And what happens to them is they appear to die, they form cocoons and they just act dead, and they then come out again as something far more glorious. And in terms of the sort of profounder meaning of this painting, the butterfly becomes a symbol of the soul. Here we are alive on earth in our bodies, which we might be quite proud of, but when we die and go to heaven, our souls will be far more beautiful than this gross body that we're inhabiting now. So he's picking out that message about not just life, birth and death, but also the afterlife, through the medium, really, of these flowers which grow and die, but then their seeds grow again, and the whole cycle starts off in the spring again.
Thanks to Richard Stemp, Gail Smith, and all at the New Covent Garden Market. Come along to the gallery if you'd like to judge Van Heysum's decorating skills for yourself. Flowers in a Terracotta Vase is on display throughout the month in Room 21. Now to our exhibition of masterpieces by the 19th century French artist Paul Delaroche. Entry to the show is via a pair of massive stage curtains. The first hint that a trip to Delaroche's world is also, in some ways, a trip to the theatre. One picture with an intriguing relationship to the stage is The Princes in the Tower, which shows the ill-fated sons of King Edward IV of England listening to the approach of their assassins. Leah Caribbean investigates.
We're here in the Delaroche exhibition, and I'm with one of the show's curators, Linda Whiteley, to explore Delaroche's fascinating relationship with the theatre. And to do that, we're standing in front of Delaroche's spine-chilling thriller of a picture that's come all the way from the Louvre. It's called The Princes in the Tower, and it absolutely wowed the public when it went on show in 1831. Linda, I wonder if you could begin by describing it for us.
Well, it's a sombre room, dominated entirely by a four-poster bed of venerable appearance at a slight angle to us, which means that we look along the bed, almost acting itself as a pointer to the door. And it's the door that suggests what's about to happen and why this is a particularly spine-chilling scene. But to return for a moment to the bed itself, there appear to be cobwebs and there's dust lying on it. There are signs of its being worm-eaten. The curtains hang in tatters. One almost has the feeling that the two little princes who are seen huddled into one corner here are not the first, perhaps, to have been victims of some horrid act enacted in this gloomy chamber.
And how does this picture then relate to theatre in Paris in the 1820s and 30s?
Well, there are a number of ways. There was an English troupe playing Shakespeare in Paris in this period. Richard III was part of the repertoire. The great actor Edmund Kean played Richard, and it's almost certain that if Delaroche didn't meet Kean, he would have heard of him and most probably seen him on the Paris stage in his role of Richard III.
Just to be clear, Richard III is the Shakespeare play in which we hear the story of the two princes having been done away with by their evil uncle, the future Richard III. That's right, isn't it? And, I mean, Delaroche himself, when he was planning this picture, did he use the stage as a way of thinking about the space, do you think?
Yes, I think certainly. I think this idea of something erupting from the left is very like the capacity of the stage with its entrances and exits. And here we see what would have been a dark corner suddenly illumined by a light, which suggests that someone is approaching. The darkness, the shadow that falls across the light, suggests that whoever it is now very close indeed. But if we look closer too, we see that the bed, perhaps not surprisingly for the period, is raised up on a kind of stage itself, which actually gives the picture a stagey look.
Now, what's really interesting is that this picture didn't only take its influence, perhaps, from the stage, but also then, in its turn, influenced stage productions. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes. The performances in Paris, the version of Shakespeare that would have been known at the time, was one which gave great prominence to the story of the princes. So perhaps it's not surprising that a friend of Delaroche, an extremely popular and well-established dramatist of the day, Casimir de Lavigne, called his play Les Enfants d'Edouard, as it was in French. Literally, of course, Edward's children. So no more mention of Richard III. So that was the whole theme of the play. There are not altogether substantiated accounts of Delaroche having had something to do with the costumes for the play, and a very well substantiated fact, which is that there was an enactment in towards the end of the play of a scene which resembles very closely indeed the grouping in this picture.
And finally, what of this claim that the exhibition makes that pictures like this one actually had a significant impact on the language of early cinema? I'm really intrigued about this, but how does it work? I mean, this is a picture that was first shown in 1831, but cinema isn't invented really until the Lumiere brothers in the 1890s. Can you explain?
Well, one of the very first films to be made, in fact, was The Murder of the Duc de Guise, based certainly in part on the well-known painting by Delaroche, now at Chantilly, so that's a sort of concrete element. I think the very fact that although the pictures are in one sense theatrical, in another they're not, because we have this close-up feeling, which of course later on the cinema is so well able to exploit. And perhaps also very importantly, I think this off the screen, which therefore anticipates, as it were, the next frame.
So when we're looking at a sort of classic bit of Hitchcock or indeed any horror movie, and there's something unspeakable going on off frame, it's that sort of device that we can think, ah, yes. Delaroche.
Yes, it is. And sometimes the use of empty space, as a camera might do, which involves the spectator. And I was thinking, The Secret Beyond the Door is actually the title of an old film, but it's also a sort of archetype of something that a cinema can do and that this picture does very well.
Linda Whiteley. If you'd like to see Delaroche's theatrical pictures for yourself, the exhibition runs until the 23rd of May. A combined exhibition and audio guide ticket costs £11 and is available from the gallery or online with a booking fee at www.nationalgallery.org.uk. It's nearly Easter, and our final segment is for anyone looking for a way to amuse the kids during the holiday. Caroline Marcus from the education team introduces Teach Your Grown-Ups, an audio tour with a difference, with a little help from a few of its stars.
This is the bit where you teach your grown-ups about art that was made between the years 1500 and 1600. Men with little beards are sailing all over the world in leaky wooden boats. Girls want to be Elizabeth I, but without the rotten teeth and ginger wig. Boys want to be Sir Walter Raleigh, who goes to America and brings back a potato as a souvenir. Are you ready to begin? Take a look.
Children will always find the story in a painting when they come to the gallery, and they draw on their personal experiences and their initial perceptions when they're looking at a painting to imagine and to interpret the meaning of the painting. And in a way, they understand spontaneously that every picture tells a story.
Grown-ups? What do they know about art? It's all brush strokes and dusty old painters to them. Well, on this tour, it's the kids who'll be teaching them a thing or two.
But with adults, it's slightly different because they sometimes come and look at a painting and they think that they should apply an art historical approach to looking, and they feel that they should know the facts and they should know the name of the artist, for example. So they're often less spontaneous, more concerned about their response than children are. And that's the thing that sometimes children think, oh no, it's going to be a bit boring.
Grown-ups like to think they know everything about art, but they don't. You can teach them things about each painting that will boggle their minds.
But actually, it's finding the balance between these two approaches, the imaginative storytelling approach that children so beautifully bring to looking, but also balancing it with that contextual art historical approach, just a few key facts, not everything, just to create an engaging way of looking at paintings.
Whenever you hear this noise, you'll be asked to press the green button. When you do, you'll be told a secret fact. It's just for you. Before you move on to the next painting, tell your grown-ups the fact that you've learned and watch them be amazed.
My one true love, she smells of cheese. Sing hey, hey, nonny, nonny, no, hey, ho.
My favourite clip on the tour is actually, it's a Dutch painting of a man playing a lute. And I think the reason that I really like this is he's wearing this really over-the-top extravagant feather in his hat. And he reminded me of Lady Gaga, a really famous pop star from today.
Is this young man a pop star with his fancy cloak and huge feathered hat? I wonder if he was in the charts when your grown-ups were young. He certainly looks cool. But is he any good?
Her eyes were red and her hair was blue. Scooby, Scooby, dooby, dooby, doo.
And I started to really have a close look at him. I noticed that unusually he's got a really red nose.
He's either suffering from a terrible cold or he's been drinking too much wine. I wonder what you grown-ups think.
Put your hands in the air like you just don't care. La 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 la. Oh, yeah.
Thanks to Caroline Marcus. Teach Your Grown-Ups is available from Audio Guide Desks along with several other tours for kids. They're all free to children under 12 accompanied by a paying adult. And if you're visiting during the holidays, do check the website for details of the full family events programme at the gallery, www.nationalgallery.org.uk. That's it for now. Until next time, goodbye.